We are back. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are speaking with the world-famous cellist Janos Starker. We are in his music room in a very special town, which is Bloomington, Indiana, known worldwide for its music making. The students with whom you were working, and it was interesting, as you talk about the auditors, there were all kinds of people in this room watching you work with other musicians, and the respect between you and the people performing and the people in the group brings me to that other element, which is the audience. I'm never going to be an international touring artist, but my part as the audience is also an important part, is it not?
Well, that's what I was referring to, that the so-called master classes are much more aimed at the audience than at the individual who plays. Often I even call them guinea pigs, mm-hmm. the ones who play.
Because it's not very nice, but I understand the concept.
I sort of explain.
They probably feel like guinea pigs too, Mr. Starker.
The fact is that approach that I have used for the past 50 or so years since I'm giving this so-called master classes is that I speak about instrumental playing, that what happens before the individual plays an instrument, how they sit, how they stand, what their relationship to the instrument, and how they breathe, how they use their muscles, find balance, and so on. And then I speak about the right hand and all its functions, and the left hand, and then music making, for the sake of which we do all these things. And as you already experienced in the past, it's called an organized method of playing. So therefore the question is that in a given limited time when an individual plays, I have to find out which of those elements are missing in that particular individual's playing or which needs further development. I have to assess, above all, their talents. Mm-hmm. Whether it's right-hand talent, left-hand talent, or musical talent, or plain intelligence.
So you start with what they do well?
No, I start what they don't do well.
But presumably you know what they do well so as to isolate that which they don't do well.
That brings up a very interesting subject that at one time some of my students who left Bloomington, I advised them to leave and went on to another famous teacher and famous performer, and they wrote back to me that finally they realized that what Mr. Starker is doing, that he's not interested in what we are doing well, but what we are not able to mm-hmm. do, while the other teacher reinforces their strong points and make it even better and better. That's not my interest.
That's a very interesting difference, isn't it?
It's a huge difference, but the main thing is that I am determined since early childhood to help people become professionals, and so if I just enhance what they do well, then they have lots of holes in their playing, and that means that in their professional life they have considerable difficulty of performing the duties which may be called they may be called to do, because it's simple to teach God-given talents to become child prodigies or performing great artists. We cannot give talents, but whatever a person has, we can help them to get the maximum out of themselves.
I want to go back to where you started, that 5% or 2% that perceive music, and I think it relates to what goes on in the seminar because of the richness of the audience, the variety of people there, and then the variety of what the performer brings, all the elements that you talk about. And it seems that perception, the ability to perceive music, requires that you perceive all of these pieces, not just did they hit the note right or do I like it or one small piece of it.
You are right. The question is not whether they hit the note right or wrong. However, they have to understand why do they hit it right and why do they hit it wrong? And then what are the different choices to solve the technical problems and the musical problems? Because there are musical laws and regulations just as well as the mechanical or technical ones. And the technical ones are to be eliminated in order to be able to make music if they have something in their minds that they would like to express. And my job is not to tell them that do it this way because I do it that way and it's fine, it works for me. But what would work for you, and is that what coincides with your opinion? By the way, what you have experienced yesterday was not the typical classes, for a simple reason. that you may have heard that we had admission week auditions. And a number of the people who played were playing in order to impress me so as to take them in my class. And some of their parents were sitting there and holding their breath that whether the old man's going to like them, kids.
Their life is, that is one of those, you take a right turn, you take a left time. Starker likes you, he lets you in. Starker doesn't like you, he does not let you in. Your life is different, yes?
Of course, but the problem, what they most of the time don't realize, that I don't pick the greatest talents in the world. I pick those who need me.
And how do you know the difference?
Well, that's why I've been teaching for 60-some years, so yeah. That somebody plays two notes and I ask them two questions, I know that where their brain capacity lies, and I most of the time look for people who have problems. They have basic talents, but those basic talents have not emerged yet fully. And they have the brain to understand the way I approach instrumental playing and music.
Curiously, when... Excuse me, Bill.
You said something very provocative. You said that unusual for you, that there are some laws, and that, you know, there are things that there are right ways and wrong ways. There are also ways that are right for the individual and right for the others. But I think a lot of people become artists or want to become artists because it allows them to express themselves and to project their will.
Not anarchy.
Willfulness, perhaps, but not anarchy. But that one of the benefits of being a performer, of being a musician, of being an artist, is that I get to express myself. That I get to I get to project my view, my vision, my understanding on the world around me. And here you are talking about laws.
Well, that's the oldest principle that I've been preaching for centuries, namely that there are birds who sing, and they don't know how, and that's the child prodigy syndrome all over the place, that they are born by God's gifts or mother's or father's gifts, and then they allowed to develop so as to be able to play masterpieces and great repertoire and variety of instruments, or even in paintings and so on, and without knowing what the heck they are doing.
Now, this is spoken by a former child prodigy, so this isn't an abstraction with you.
Not truly, because the fact was that I mentioned to you that just recently received a book written by a very distinguished colleague of mine, a cello professor, who writes about histories, child prodigies, and what happened to them, because then he had conversations with them in their middle years or later years, in my case. And there is absolutely not one single person that coincides with what I've been doing, because I was never exploited as a child prodigy. I played, but I was not touring, I was not traveling. Whether it was because of political reasons that they didn't let me, that's something else. But plus, I was lucky that my parents were just simply interested that their children should play music. And there was no reflected glory searched by them. Eventually, of course, they enjoyed the fact that I became famous, but the fact is that they were never exploiting me, so which means I was not doing the kind of child prodigy concertizing as people associate with historically with Mozart or Mendelssohn, and later on with the Menuhins and Ritchies and so on, and now with the Sarah Changs and this kind of people. That was not my lot, thank goodness.
So but, these are the birds who sing and don't know how.
And that's what happened, and that's why so many of these child prodigies disappeared into obscurity. The book most of the time speaks about people, of course, who succeeded in later years and what they went through in order to establish themselves as grown-up artists. But the history is not registering all those immense number of child prodigies who at the age of 8, 10, 12, 13 produced fabulous things and then disappeared.
So what's the transition?
The transition is that if the child prodigy at one point has enough brain to ask the question, what happens when I'm not playing well? And what happens when I'm playing well? And cannot find the answer, then he's going to disappear. If he finds the answer, then he's going to continue the road toward growing up as a musician and as an instrumentalist or whatever. And then eventually he may become what we call a professional, because a professional is simply somebody who's consistent. Versus not the amateur. People confuse there are what we call the dilettantes. And dilettantes are not, it's not a bad name. It's just somebody who does it maybe for the love of the music, but without knowing what they are doing. So which means dilettantes sometimes can pay play fabulous performances when the sun is shining and the stomach is okay and the family is good, the children are not screaming or something, they can play fabulously well. But then they play extremely badly, so which means the range of the performing standards are fluctuating to an unacceptable standard. A professional is supposed to be always up to a very high level. I spoke about it maybe too often in my life, that in the moment when a professional cannot consistently play well, he should quit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm waiting for myself to quit.
Well, we're waiting. We hope we wait a long time. We're going to be back, and I really would like to talk more about this notion of professional, because it seems to me it applies much more broadly than simply to music. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are with Janosch Starker, and we all will be back in just a moment. Please do be with us.